All right, let's begin the Bucksport Planning Meeting for Tuesday, May 1st. Number one on the agenda, the roll call. Mr. Hammond.
Stephen Bishop.
Here.
Ron McDonald's absent. David Grant is absent. Steve Feit.
Present.
Edward Belcher.
Present.
George Hanson.
Here.
Jay Duroff.
Here.
Yes.
Duroff's here. That is correct.
Item two, review and acceptance of the minutes of the April 3rd meeting for those who were present.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay.
No spelling errors, noted.
Punctuation.
Item number three, the chair's report. He's not here, so nothing. He usually doesn't have much. So number four.
Did we vote on the minutes?
What's that?
Did we vote on the minutes? Did I miss it?
We did not.
Oh, we did not. I thought we did. Okay, okay. Okay, we. All right. Vote on the minutes. All vote to approve. Approve. Oh, you weren't here.
I will abstain because
okay.
I'm here.
That's a good idea. All right, so minutes approved. Chair's report. He's not here. Code enforcement. Officers report. Anything, Jeff?
I just want to welcome the two new members tonight. We have Stephen Bishop and Jay Duroff, who will be on the board for a few years. And just to let them know, as well as everybody who may not know, these meetings are recorded, just an audio recording right at this point in time, but sometime in the near future we'll be doing video recordings that will be broadcast on the cable channel and streamed on the internet live as well as recorded.
Wow.
That's in the works. We do that now with the town council, but we're also planning to do it for committee meetings as well as board meetings.
Does that mean we have to wear a tie in the future?
No. And that's all I have.
Okay. Item number five, a limited public forum, which is an opportunity for the public to address the board on matters related to land use or planning in the town of Bucksport. Anyone have anything they'd like to share? No. Item number six, unfinished business, is listed here as none. To item number seven, new business, application for approval of a site plan for a lobster processing facility on Heritage Park Road, tax map 3, lot 54-4.
I have a brief presentation to give to the board, but first I'd like to make certain, is somebody here to represent the applicant?
We're here, but Jim Kaiser is the one who prepared the application. I'm Charles Early from Lewis and Mom Architecture. We're working with Nickerson and Bay on the architectural design.
So you're not here to represent the applicant, though?
I wasn't asked to be. We just came out of interest.
I'm not sure where Jim is.
If you have questions, we can relay them to, but Jim Kaiser is actually hired by the owner.
Yeah. I was expecting him to be here, but he needs to be here. Somebody needs to be here to represent the application.
Represent the application, yeah, kind of.
Well, then I think I'll represent the application. So if there's any issues that we can relay them through our... I guess they can.
Okay. I'll try to call him.
He might be on his way. Didn't tell him, so I don't know.
I have his number.
All right.
Yeah,
we're good. Guess you should fire Kaiser for not being here. Said you should fire Kaiser for not being here to represent.
So this application is for approval of a site plan and development on the Heritage Park Road. Classified as a manufacturing facility, and I've highlighted on our table of land uses. That's a recognized land use. The property is in the C3 district, and in that column you can see that a new manufacturing facility requires level 2 review, which is planning board review, and that's why we're here tonight to talk about his application. This is just a picture from our official zoning map to show that the property is in the C3 district. You can hardly make it out there, but it says C3 right there. This is the industrial park. The entire industrial park has its own zoning classification, and this is a lot we're talking about right here. Got a little better picture to show you from our tax map. So this is phase one of Buckstown Heritage Park. Most of these lots are developed, except for this one here. And this is phase two here. These 8 lots here are for proposed developments. We may have one already that you have reviewed and approved in this lot here, which was the
Muscle Farm.
Muscle Farm. And this is the one we're talking about tonight, right across the street. This satellite image is a little dated. Gives you a rough idea. It doesn't even show the road extension, but it goes up into here. This is the phase one development here. And the lot, again, we're talking about is up in this corner, roughly here. But you can see that most of the...
No, I don't think it goes much farther beyond what was originally set.
Well, the point is, it's up in this area here. Yeah. Exactly where it isn't shown on this map. These are some street views to show you. A little hard to see with the light, but this is a view of the extension of Heritage Park Road looking back towards phase one. As you can see, the poles are now installed. We have water and sewer in the street. Everything's good to go. And this is just a simple shot of the lot we're talking about tonight. You see there's a hydrant there. There's a solid water system.
And that's a turnaround just to the right.
Turnaround's right here, yeah. And another section over here. It's a T-shaped turnaround.
So the hydrant's the end of the water main.
Yes.
Basically.
And I want to point out an error that was made in the fee for your review tonight. The actual fee that was required for this review was $1,150. The applicant paid $2,500. That was the number that was given to them by their engineer, who miscalculated the amount. So what I've done is broken down what additional fees that GreenCat will be paying as they apply for their other permits. Based on this size structure, the building permit fee will be $816.65. The entrance permit fee will be $20, sewer permit $15, and based on the number of fixtures they're telling me now, the plumbing permit will be $280. So for a total fee of $2,281.65, which means that they'll be getting a refund of $218.35 if these figures remain accurate.
Now, water entrance fees are separate.
There's no permit required for a water service line.
Well, it's not owned by the town.
Right, so the town does not have permit requirements for water service.
No, but
Whatever fees are required for the water installation are between the property owner and Maine Water. The application was sent out to department directors for their comments. I heard back from almost every department director, and there were no issues raised about this project. I did not hear in writing from the superintendent of the sewer department, but I did have a discussion with him today, and he is in discussion right now with the applicant, or the engineer, I believe, about the quality of the wastewater. He wants to be certain that the wastewater BODs, pH, and ammonia levels are within appropriate range. And that hasn't been clearly determined yet, but is in the works. And I also sent out abutter notices to all the surrounding property owners. I did not receive any comments or questions from any abutters. Any questions?
Is there a reason why they chose that last lot in? That's the new section that just got built.
Maybe Rich can answer that.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Is there a reason why they chose that lot, the last lot in on the left? That's the new section of the industrial park. I'm just curious as to...
Both parties chose the last two lots because the water runs downhill. There's going to be serious runoff issues with the other six lots, which we'll have to deal with at the time. Also, they were the smallest for square footage for DEP before they had to do any permitting, so they didn't want to deal with extra DEP permitting, so they chose the lots with the less amount.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I also want to just, for the benefit of the two new members, in your packet you received a level 2 review documentation form. I hope you all have your copies with you this evening.
Yes.
Because you're going to use that to actually review the application. And it's a checklist. You go down through the checklist. The first one is a CEO conducts the introductory presentation. That's been done. And then the applicant has an opportunity to comment on the application as well next. And then you take general questions, or you ask general questions if you have any. And then you ask for public comment. And once you've done that, you actually begin your application review. And again, you go down through each group of standards and determine which, if any, of the specific items in the group of standards is applicable to the application, and then you document how the applicant has met that standard with their application material. And once you've gone through all of that, then you go back and do a findings, which is where you make your actual determination if they've met all the applicable standards or not. So that's how the application review is conducted. Any questions about that?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I'm done.
Number two, does the applicant want to give an introductory presentation of the project?
In terms of, we represent the building.
Right.
Part of it, and the only comment that we would like to make is it's a design build project with Nickerson O'Day as the general contractor. The owner hired Nickerson O'Day to do that, and Nickerson O'Day hired Lewis & Mull Architecture of Bucksport to do the architectural design. When we were working up the drawings on the square footage, the actual square footage will be slightly smaller than what is recorded. We want to remain under 15,500 square feet because we don't have a sprinkler. If we stay under 15,500 for an F1 factory industrial use. And so I just want that would be nice to have on the record that you understand that there will be adjustments to the smaller portion of the building. The factory itself is a pretty big building, about 12,000 square feet. And then the office and administration wing is sort of an L that wraps around it. It's a single story, call it a lean-to type construction. And we've got some ability to reduce that building size by the necessary area to get it down. My actual numbers were 15,488.
Yeah, it says 15,555 here, so that's going to be lower than 15,5.
It's going to be 15,5.
Okay.
We'll make sure that happens during the design development. It was just the difference of how we measured the footprint versus how we measured. Terms of will that thing, is that an overhead projector?
It is. And it's good if you make comments at the podium, then it becomes part of the public record, if you will.
Oh, okay. I brought images of that, how that works. There he is.
Sorry.
How do we put this face down?
Yes.
Face down.
Switch to the lower right-hand side.
This is the owner of Greenhead Lobster has joined us. This is Hugh.
Hi there.
Hello.
Sorry, I'm late.
Yeah. Perfect. So, do you have a? Was there a pointer I saw? Is that your pointer?
Great. Thank you.
But I don't know if I'm going to push that button.
Yep.
Okay. The road
is out here. The access road and the turnaround is up here. We're avoiding the turnaround in terms of the parking you saw in the civil. But just to understand the building, this is the pre-engineered building of 12,000 square feet, out to out. And this is the admin and support building that's sort of a lean-to onto that structure. So we're going to adjust this slightly to keep it under 1,500. So they're bringing in the live lobster here. They're putting them in the cooler, and then they start getting split into two. They go into here. In this area, they get terminated, and then they get broken down into raw tails and claws and knuckles. So the tails go this way and go back into the freezer, and then back out that to this same loading dock area. And the claws get cooked, and then they get cooled down, and then they get broken up into claws and knuckles and body treatment. And then they go into this cooler or over here if they're frozen through the loading dock area. So it's very compact as far as the way that works. One thing that's really important about this project is that both there's a raw group of staff and a cooked group of staff, and they're not allowed to commingle because of the nature of what they're doing. So the cook staff, everybody comes in the morning, goes through here with their card reader control. They go in through their locker rooms into a break room where they have their toilets, and they go through hand and boot wash, and they come out in their work area. And they can't see each other, and they can't work with each other. They don't commingle. They don't mix. And the raw folks are over here, and they're doing the same thing, and they're coming out through here into that area. And then the rest of this is just regular admin area. Another interesting point on this project is that if we talk to the state fire marshal, and if we keep this area under 10% of the whole, then there's no construction barrier-free permit requirement. They don't review the project. That's not to say that Lewis and Mom and all the engineers that are working on the project, of course, work according to code and in terms of ADA compliance and all the other energy codes and all that sort of thing. But the actual permit that we normally would have to get for a project, the fire marshal doesn't review them as long as that area is under 10%, which it is. So I don't know if Hugh, is there something else that you would like to say about the project?
I'm just
saying,
you're doing a good job so far, Charlie.
So, I'll switch over. That's just how the building works. Put this up really quick. It's going to be sideways for you, gentlemen. These are the elevations. It's a one-story building, about 14 feet. Refrigerated buildings need to be lifted about 52 inches.
You can turn that off, Charlie.
Yes. I'm not new to this technology. Jim, there's Jim.
All right.
So Jim can present the site.
Beautiful.
We're raising the building 52 inches so that our loading dock height is our 0-0. There's other sites, other projects in the park that have done the same thing. But this is the pre-engineered building, and that's the lean-to. So Jim Kiser has joined us, and we'll let him represent his work. Do you have a copy of it?
Yep.
That's good. Thanks, Charlie.
Leave those dynamos 6.
It's quite an extreme.
Perfect.
Evening, my name is Jim Kiser. I apologize for being late. I had it at 7 o'clock, not 6:30. So, you already got an overview of the building itself. We're here to basically present and hopefully get approval for Greenhead Holdings LLC to construct about a 15,000 square foot processing facility to process cooked and uncooked lobster meets. We've got the site, basically, it's the last lot on the left in the business park, or the commerce park. And we're going to come in just before the Hammerhead turnaround with parking facility. The building will be in front of that. We have about 39 spaces, I believe, on the plan. The building will have access in an employee access at this location, general public access for any visitors or anything coming in this location. We're going to have loading docks, two-bay loading dock area, which will access right on to Heritage Park Drive also. And then we have a side area access on the side of the building that will provide for waste removal. Waste will be collected in here. This will be the processing waste, which would be the shells. And then general waste for the operations will be in a dumpster location over on this portion of the site. We've got it graded so that primarily all the stormwater follows the existing drainage patterns. We'll have a little bit of water coming out towards the road and in the ditch for Heritage Park Road. And then the remainder of it will sheet flow and channel flow off to the back on both sides. We've got it set up for drainage so that this is, 8/10 of an acre of impervious surface. So the next expansion of the project would then create something that we would need a DEP stormwater permit. So we've graded this site so that at that point in time we can collect all the water and address DEP requirements on that for treating and controlling the runoff, which would probably end up happening either down in this area or maybe even in the back. There'd be room right in the back here for a collection and two sites out front that would be served as controlling stormwater on the next phase. We are going to put some drip edge collections for roof runoff so that we don't have to go back in and alter that later on. Put it in now and address that in the current situation. So we will providing some treatment of runoff in this early stage, mostly all roof runoff. We have propane tanks on the front side of the building. We're going to access, put a fence around that, or at least two-sided fence to protect visuals on it. And then we're going to have a fence on the back side here to protect some visuals on the waste products on the side of the building. We've got it protected for erosion control around the facility in the key locations. And we're going to have two different pavement patterns, one for the parking and one for the heavier truck traffic. We did present a waste plan that will utilize, try to keep the waste odors down by removing the product from the site every day. Farming Cooperative has expressed an interest in it for using it as fertilizer. And so we expect that if we don't have somebody show up for that day, the intent is to, as it's spelled out in the plan, is to move the product inside in the cold storage for the evening hours, so it's not staying outside during the evening hours. We're lighting the parking lot, and we have several area lights on the building for entrances. That will just be downcasting lights to just shine on the areas that are intended to light. I think that pretty much covers what we've got on site. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that the board has as you review this.
You have just one pole light?
We're having one pole light right now. Might need another one depending on photometrics. We're still working on that process. If we do, we'll just split the distance on it and put it up on that. We are proposing to have overhead onto those poles, so they'll be just traditional power poles that will hang lights on.
I noted a couple things in your sections for paving. Just graphically in what you've written out don't seem to jibe.
The graphic's not the scale, so you can't go by the scaling on that. Okay. On that.
So your surface is going to be thicker than your base, and the asphalt?
Unless I got them transposed, they shouldn't be.
No?
I haven't been transposed, yes. The thicker one would be the base material.
Yeah. Get a complete, nice, clean plan.
So helpful.
Thank you.
Was your question answered?
I have one when it's my turn.
You also have a
turn? I'll be you with the gentleman from the architecture firm. When you gave your presentation, you said keeping it under so many square footage does not require a sprinkler system.
Right.
Okay. What again was that figure, sir?
15,500 square feet.
Okay.
That's what we should stay under.
Okay. I'm newer to the planning board, but the fire service I've gotten into, I've been in a long time on the call department here in town. Did you do some investigation to find out what it would cost to sprinkle this? I understand from the inside of this building, there's not going to be an awful lot of fire load inside this building.
It's a cold building, that's right.
Cold building, yes. Did you look into a sprinkler system, what it would cost to sprinkle it?
Nickerson O'Day would be responsible for that. They're the general contractor. Okay. I can tell you from experience, it's going to range between $2.50 to $3.50 a square foot.
Square foot.
Whoa, to do it. It's not really a practical thing in a cold building to run sprinklers because of the temperatures. So if you did that, it'd be a dry system.
Yeah.
If you wanted to sprinkler it. But in this phase, it's not foreseen to sprinkler it for economic reasons. So, of course, we would have to have the fire extinguishers and fire alarm and smoke alarm, smoke detectors and all that. There wouldn't be any full stations. We would take the option of the fire extinguishers and the fire alarm system. That's optional what you do. And because you have a limited population in the building. But,
good. You have answered my question. Thank you very much.
And that was also my question.
Ask it if you wish.
Propane tanks, are they buried?
Excuse me?
The propane tanks, are they going to be buried?
No, they're
going to
be above ground. The problem is when you bury them, they, especially in the wintertime when you get high usage, they tend to freeze up. You'd think they'd be a little bit better, but what happens is the environment around them freezes up and they get poor utilization than when they're above ground.
Any other comments from the applicants? Anything else you guys wanted to say? Any more questions from the board? Then part four of our level two review documentation is any comments by the public. If anyone would like to come up to the podium and make comments, they're welcome to do so now. Jim Morrison.
Hey, my question is, what amount of refuse are you prepared to handle at this point? And is that going to change? And when it leaves the facility, where does it go to? who exactly is going to take it and what route are they in and how are they going to transport it. Could you kind of expound on that a little bit for us?
I can. Yeah, usually it's hauled by like a gondola dump truck, and there's a couple compost companies that are going to probably take it from Maine. The only thing that we're throwing away is the back shell of the lobster. So, and then the cook shells, all of those. We have the back shell and the cook claws and arm shells, so it's about, we do 20,000 pounds of lobster a day. It'll be about 2,000 pounds of waste.
Wow.
Yep. But I definitely plan on moving it daily. We're also, for it's very inexpensive, but also compact it. So, it actually can get quite small if you compact it.
Thank you.
Yep. And who knows, maybe even the salmon company will, eat it.
Yeah. Wasn't that interesting?
But eventually, we'd like to do something better than compost. That's the long plan, to extract the chitin and the get some value out of it. But we don't have an immediate plan for that.
Any other public comments?
Welcome to Bunchport.
Yeah. All right, with no other public comments, now the board conducts their application review where we go through the actual level two review documentation, and we begin with environmental standards. Standard number one, are the soils suitable for the land use? See why not.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, stormwater runoff from the land use is minimized to the greatest practical extent and adequately managed to reduce the risk of relevant detrimental effects. I believe one of the gentlemen already explained that they're using the existing swales and the stormwater plan. So I believe that is taken care of, unless someone else has something. Three, soil that may be exposed during any soil disturbances. Disturbance activity of the land use is adequately protected from unreasonable erosion and sedimentation. I assume you'll be using standard.
Yeah, we have silt fence around the site and also some check dams in the areas where it's going to be concentrated a little bit more, especially where they're man-made channelizations.
Perfect. DEP, best practices.
Best practices,
correct. Yes.
Anything else, anyone on three? Four, surface and subsurface waters are adequately protected from the detrimental effects of any water pollutant from the land use.
You might find this one to be not applicable.
Not applicable.
Yeah, we don't really have anything on site that is hazardous.
Okay. As long as the rubber bands are on.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Number five, the ambient air environment is actively protected from detrimental effects of any air pollutant from land use. I assume that's not applicable as well. Six, significant wildlife habitat and other important habitat is as identified in the Bucksport Comprehensive Plan as adapted or actively protected from any relevant detrimental effect of the land use.
There's no habitat identified in this area.
I can't imagine that there was, so not applicable.
Significant habitat, I should say.
Okay. Seven, vegetation with any applicable shoreline district is protected from excessive cutting or removal. It's not in the shoreline district, so that's not applicable. Site documentation to verify compliance with any environment objective. I don't need one. Anyone in a site visit? Not needed? None? and special conditions to ensure compliance with any environment. I can't see that there would be any for that. The plan is so well written out. And we don't. We do the finding when we come back.
Okay.
All right. Special area standards, special areas objectives that must be met, except as noted. Areas of prehistorical and historical importance are actively protected from any relevant detrimental effect of land use. I cannot see how that is applicable. Vistas of scenic value are adequately protected from any relevant detrimental effect of land use. I can't see how that's applicable. Butch Osborne would be upset. Three, areas of public access to water bodies, wetlands, and areas developed with commercial fisheries and maritime activities are adequately protected from any relevant detrimental effect of the land use. Not applicable. Areas of flood hazard are adequately protected from any detrimental effect of the land use.
Property's not in a flood zone.
Five, areas with unique natural character identified in the Bucksport Comprehensive Plan as adapted or adequately protected from any relevant detrimental effect of land use. Seems not applicable. Any interest in a site documentation? They're all not applicable, so I can't see how that would be necessary. Special conditions to ensure compliance? Everything's not applicable in that. Local areas standard. Local areas objective that must be met. The scale and site features of the land use are consistent with the development patterns in the location of the neighborhood. I would believe, yes, it's in the perfect location. Two, land use is appropriately separated and shielded from abutting land uses in public or private ways to adequately mitigate any relevant detrimental effect. The abutters all received notices. We received no comments.
Well, the abutting lots aren't developed yet.
There will be, I think, some vegetated buffer along the perimeter.
We're trying to leave, perimeter buffer, and then the back will be left. They're low-growth trees, so it's not as if it's a mature stand. It was harvested before it was developed by the town, so we'll leave some of the saplings that are there from that standpoint.
Just let them mature. Okay. Any relevant detrimental effects of electromagnetic fields from land use are adequately mitigated? I don't think any are present. That's probably not applicable. Four, any relevant detrimental effects of artificial lightning from the land use adequately mitigated? Just one light, I believe.
We have one. The loading dock is lit up, too. They're all downcasted, and so they'll be contained within the site.
There's no plan to put a light on the pole, utility pole?
Yeah.
On the street?
No, not on the street, just on the site. We're just going to put them.
Yeah, just that one in the parking lot, I think?
Yeah.
Or two.
All right, okay. Five, any relevant detrimental effects of noise from the land use are adequately mitigated? Let's see. This would produce much noise.
Probably gas by location, I would say.
Be just the HVAC equipment, really.
Number six, any relevant detrimental effects of nuisance odors from the land use are adequately mitigated. Someone mentioned about bringing waste inside when it's not picked up.
If we're not, we're not. And that's spelled out in the waste plan that we provided for that.
Seven, the solar gain utilized by active or passive solar energy collecting systems that may be impacted by the land use is adequately protected. Is that relevant?
We're not utilizing any solar at this time, anyhow.
That's not applicable, then. Number eight, any relevant detrimental effects of smoke and dust from the land use are adequately mitigated? That's I don't believe that's happening.
Everything's paved, so.
Any relevant detrimental effects of subterranean vibration from the land use? They're adequately mitigated. I don't believe that would be applicable. Site visit. Let's see how. Special conditions to ensure compliance. Okay, public safety standards. Public safety objectives that must be met, except as noted. The quantity and quality of public and private drinking water supplies are adequately protected from any relevant detrimental effects of land use.
Could you talk a bit, Jim, about the water consumption plan for this?
Yeah, we've talked about it with the water district, and the capacity is adequate up there. We've given some estimates on utilization right now, and those are more than within the range of that the district can supply us, or the department can supply us. So we don't anticipate any issues there. Understand that the fire department has been up there and actually with several pumper trucks and with the booster station up there, still didn't have any issues running out of water with the size of the booster station and for the park up there. So should be more than adequate supply for us.
And they've done a hydrant test.
I don't know that they've done a physical hydrant test on it. They told me there was about 80 PSI available static, which is plenty. And then they didn't give us a flow. Basically, the standpoint was that he said that, you know, he's had a couple pumper trucks up there pumping at the same time out of a couple different hydrants, and they didn't run dry. So
those are tested every year by the water company. Matter of fact, they're tested
flushed
in my neighborhood.
They're flushed, but they are not.
Yeah.
They aren't rated. They aren't flow rated.
They had a gauge on it today.
Oh, really? Interesting.
They did. Yeah. And, I don't put that on every fire hydrant in this town, but the one outside my house, they flow tested it and then they gauged it. So again, I don't know if they do that to everyone.
He didn't indicate it on this one because I did ask him for the flow, you know, what the flows were, and the reference was a pumper truck. So if he has them, he didn't have them available at the time I was talking with him, but.
Water flow was an issue at the very beginning up there, and the station took care of that.
Yeah. Well, we had a little bit of a misunderstanding. We thought the pressure was quite low, actually, and didn't realize it was.
One time it was.
We didn't realize it was already got lit up. Yeah. Booster station on it, so we were automatically thinking we were going to be adding a booster station internally to the facility. But then when I finally talked to him, he indicated that, oh, no, we got
at the end of the entrance road.
Services up there, so.
Yeah. Okay, anything else on the private or public drinking water protection? I think that's good. Number two, safety and sufficiency of energy supply services adequately protected from any detrimental effects of land use. I can't see that that's applicable.
Doesn't even seem like it's applicable. They get the wires up or just poles out there?
Last I was out there, it was just the poles. Just the poles, but they'd be back to string the wires. They probably won't energize them until somebody makes a service call, which will probably be us at the point in time when we need to get temporary set up.
Number three, public safety services are adequately protected from any relevant detrimental effects of the land use. Does not seem applicable to me.
We had no comments from department heads. Please.
If our chief asked the question, is the building going to be sprinklered? And the answer he received from me after talking to the architect is no, it won't be sprinklered. Unless the fire marshal for some reason decides it needs to be, but I don't think that's going to happen.
So we have to have the review because of size. We will be going to the fire marshal.
And he also asked the question if the building was going to have a security alarm system. And the answer to that question was that the building will have cameras and motion detectors.
Yeah, but they have a security system.
You have to have card readers to get in the building, right? Other than...
Is that going to be,
there must be a public...
Staff will all have card readers. The public access to the lobby will not, but then inside the plant to go into processing, you have to have a card reader. And then the exit over there on the, from the loading dock area would be a card reader and a buzzing. So staff could go in there, but if a visitor comes, a delivery comes, and wants to go in the
loading dock. Okay, it's very security.
Are those monitors and cameras monitored by a third party, or is that something you're going to contain in-house?
The camera, I don't know if the cameras will be monitored by a third party. I didn't really thought about that. That'd be in-house, but the alarm system will be third party.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, number four, public wastewater facilities are adequately protected from any detrimental effects of land use. Does anyone think that's applicable?
Number four, you said?
Yeah, number four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is most definitely applicable, yeah.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because of the questions that the sewer department has asked about the quality of the wastewater.
Oh, you mentioned that, yeah. Yes, yes.
I don't think you're
so here it's the pH. The pH question?
They've been asking about the BOD, and we're still researching that. So as time goes on, whether we have to do any pretreatment on it or additional... treatment before it actually leaves the site will be a determination of what we find out from BOD contents form.
One of the last really before you was a septic pumpage system, and that's already caused problems there at that one. But I don't know if they've gotten that straightened up yet.
I'm not sure if that's been resolved or not.
The only question that was posed to me was the BOD content on it. So we're looking at that. And we've also provided a manhole at the service connection so that they have a visual point of connection so that if they have any questions, they can go up and sample and address it at that point in time.
Yeah.
So. I had a brief discussion with Dave Mishu today because he hadn't really responded to the request for comments. He thought the meeting was later on in the month than it is. But he mentioned, in addition to BODs, also ammonia levels and pH.
Okay.
Did he talk to you about that?
No, I haven't talked to him about that.
All right. Number five, proper management of solid wastes is adequately protected from any relevant detrimental effects of the land use.
So the solid wastes are being removed daily?
The fish solid, the lobster solid waste will be removed daily. The general waste for the facility will probably be on a weekly basis for the dumpster disposal, depending on how generation is through the office and employees. But the fish waste, the lobster waste, will be removed on a daily basis.
Six, the safety and sufficiency of streets and sidewalks are adequately protected from any relevant detrimental effects of land use. I can't imagine that's applicable at this point. You're the last one at the end of it.
And there's no sidewalks up there on Heritage Park.
Anyone need a site visit to document and verify compliance? Also not applicable. Special conditions to ensure compliance? I don't think anything is applicable. All right. Specific uses standards is the next section. Specific uses objectives that must be met.
There's one in section 13 that would apply there, and that's the parking requirements. And parking requirements for production uses, which is the category that covers this proposed land use. One space for each employee, and one space for every 200 square feet of floor area utilized for retail sales. That's zero in this case here, but there is a need for one space per employee. How many employees do we have?
We've estimated that to be, less than the 39 spaces that we have allocated on there.
That's going to meet your employee parking needs?
Yeah.
Any dealing with the general public? Vendors?
There may be an occasional vendor in on it. We've allocated, what we've got is a couple handicap spaces, and we've talked about basically allocating, you know, one or two spaces right by the main entrance to accommodate a visitor or a vendor coming in to oversee it, or compliance or whatever, basically being able to park right at the entrance.
Any other objectives that should be on? Next, site visit documentation to verify compliance with any of the use objectives. Doesn't seem necessary. Special conditions to assure compliance for any specific uses? No, that as well. All right, lot dimensions. Dimension objectives that must be met.
There are two that apply to this project. One is the building setback, which is 10 feet from property lines. I think this site plan shows that being met. And the second one is building height. In the C3 district, the building height, the limit is 75 feet. The height of the building is
18-ish at the peak.
Any other objectives?
That's all that apply to this.
Okay. Site visit necessary? Special conditions to ensure compliance? I'd say no. Anything else before we go over the findings? You guys? No?
Any, you aren't lighting your sign out front?
Right now, there's no anticipation of lighting the sign. We didn't provide power outdoor at the current time. It's not a high, you know, high visible utilization facility. It's pretty much, you know, it's there and you're coming to it, so there wasn't a need to light the sign.
And any plantings in that front-end area?
We weren't being in the industrial park. We weren't, you know, proposing any at this point in time. And we didn't see anything under the ordinance as far as any screening or buffering that would be applicable to this. So at the current time, we're not proposing any.
Okay.
It'll all be landscaped, you know, grassed and loamed and seeded and grassed in. But
right, ready to go through the findings. Findings for environmental standards. Is there clear and convincing evidence in the record to support the conclusion that the above applicable environment objectives have been met? I believe this requires a show of hands.
There's a motion and second, a show of hands.
Yeah, motion to vote yes.
I didn't get the second on that.
Oh,
second. Okay.
Okay, sorry.
You can check. Okay.
Typically in the past, what the board has done is to state as the motion that proposed land use will have no impact on the environment in this case that's contrary to the purposes of its ordinance. And that was seconded, then you vote on that.
Okay, sounds good. Let's do that.
So moved.
Thank you. All right, make a motion. Is there clear and convincing evidence just in the record to support the conclusion that the above applicable special area objectives have been met?
There were none that were applicable, so there's no need to make that finding.
Okay, so there are no applicable special area objectives. A vote is not required.
Next, the local area standards. Were there any applicable local area objectives?
Yes, there were.
Oh, yes, there were. Okay. Yeah, the perimeter buffer, lighting, sound, waste.
So the motion again would be the proposed land use will have no impact on local areas. That's contrary to the purposes of this ordinance. That's typically how you form your motions.
Move that the proposed land use will have no impact on local areas as contrary to the purposes of this ordinance.
I second. Vote yes, that there's that they have been met. Show hands. Unanimous. Yes. Passes. Public safety standards. There's several here. Motion to decide, is there clear and convincing evidence in the record to support that the applicable public safety objectives have been met?
Your turn.
The proposed land use will have no impact on public safety that is contrary to the purposes of this ordinance.
Second.
Vote. All yay. Proposed land use will have no impact on public safety. Specific use standards.
Again, based on the evidence contained in the plan and that discussion, the proposed land use has met all applicable specific use standards in this ordinance.
Is that a motion?
That's one.
Yeah, I'll second that. Vote for proposed land use has met all applicable specific standards in this ordinance. Okay. The dimensions of the lot, the findings on that. A motion that the proposed land use has met all applicable dimension standards in this ordinance, as mentioned by Jeff.
Second.
Vote for the proposed land use has met all the dimension standards. Motion carries. Decision. Based on the conclusion of the planning board as documented above, the proposed land use, I would make a motion that will not have any impact that is contrary to the purposes of Appendix K, land use, and therefore the application is approved.
Second.
Vote. All yay. All the application is approved. Very fine application indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Look forward to getting that under construction. Do you want me to call Dave and get that stuff for
you? Yeah, I'll work it out with him. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Very good. Appreciate it.
You don't have any seconds on sale out there?
What's that asking for a little fishing pool up at the new sand? Actually, I don't need lobster, so for 5 seconds, you could have my place in line.
If it comes to lobster steak, I go to steak, but I do eat some lobster occasionally.
Well, why not both?
Ready to move on?
I'm ready to move on. Section item 8, administrative business. A, 2017 comprehensive plan goals and strategies implementation, which there was a little discussion on last time.
Would you rather wait to...
continue. I was wondering if there should be a motion to do this when we had maybe the full board.
Right. And the two new members have not seen the handout I've given to the board about the goals and objectives.
Oh, okay.
So